All right, so tonight I'm departing from our Active Hope series. I don't know, in part just it felt like shaking things up a little bit. We'll return to that. And also, it'll be a trip down memory lane because we'll pass around an article and read it and then discuss it. And in part, I did this because I am busy preparing a talk that I'm going to give Saturday morning at San Francisco Zen Center. So I am leaving on the train on Thursday and going down there, and Saturday morning I'll be giving the talk, and they record the talks. I mean, actually, you can live stream the talks, but you can watch them later as well. So, yeah. So that just can do as much in a week. But this is an article that I think will stimulate some interesting conversation by Barry Magid. No gain. Relationships won't solve our problems, but they can help us grow. So, and then you want to grab the microphone.
No gain. Relationships won't solve our problems, but they can help us grow. By Mary Magid. My teacher, Charlotte Joko Beck, pretty much sums up her attitude towards relationships when she says, relationships don't work. Rather than talk about everything we normally think that we gain from relationships, like love, companionship, security, and family life, she looks at relationships from the perspective of no gain. She focuses on all the ways relationships go awry when people enter into them with particular sorts of gaining ideas and expectations. And expect relationships to function as an antidote to their problems. Antidotes are all versions of if only. If only she were more understanding, if only he were more interested in sex, if only she would stop drinking. For Joko, that kind of thinking about relationships means always externalizing the problem, always assuming that the one thing that's going to change your life is outside yourself and in the other person. If only the other person would get his or her act together, then my life would go the way I want it to.
Joko tries to bring people back to their own fears and insecurities. These problems are ours to practice with, and we can't ask anyone else, including a teacher, to do that work for us. To be in a real relationship, a loving relationship, is simply to be willing to respond and be there for the other person without always calculating what we are going to get out of it. Many people come to me and say, I've been in lots of relationships where I give and give and give. But for them, it wasn't enlightenment, it was masochism. What they are missing from Joko's original account is a description of what relationships are actually for, what the good part is. In addition to being aware of the pitfalls that Joko warns us about, we should also look at all the ways in which relationships provide the enabling conditions for our growth and development. That's particularly obvious with children. We would all agree that children need a certain kind of care and love in order to grow and develop. Nobody would say to a 5-year-old, "What do you need mommy for? Deal with your fear on your own." The thing is that most of us are still struggling with remnants of that child neediness and fear in the midst of a seemingly adult life. Relationships aren't just crutches that allow us to avoid those fears. They also provide conditions that enable us to develop our capacities so we can handle them in a more mature way.
It's not just a parent-child relationship or a relationship with a partner that does that. The relationship of a student with a teacher, between members of a sangha, between friends, and among community members all help us to develop in ways we couldn't on our own. Some aspects of ourselves don't develop except under the right circumstances.
Aristotle stressed the importance of community and friendship as necessary ingredients for character development and happiness. He is the real origin of the idea that it takes a village to raise a child. However, you don't find much in Aristotle about the necessity of romantic love in order to develop. His emphasis was on friendship. Aristotle said that in order for people to become virtuous, we need role models, others who have developed their capacities for courage, self-control, wisdom, and justice. We may emphasize different sets of virtues or ideas about what makes a proper role model, but Buddhism also asserts that as we are all connected and interdependent, none of us can do it all on our own.
Acknowledging this dependency is the first step of real emotional work within relationships. Our ambivalence about our own needs and dependency gets stirred up in all kinds of relationships. We cannot escape our feelings and needs and desires if we are going to be in relationships with others. To be in relationships is to feel our vulnerability in relation to other people who are unpredictable and in circumstances that are intrinsically uncontrollable and unreliable.
We bump up against the fact of change and impermanence as soon as we acknowledge our feelings or needs for others. Basically, we all tend to go into one of two directions as a strategy for coping with that vulnerability. We either go in the direction of control or of autonomy. If we go for control, we may be saying, if only I can get the other person or my friends or my family to treat me the way I want, then I'll be able to feel safe and secure. If only I had a guarantee that they'll give me what I need, then I wouldn't have to face uncertainty. With this strategy, we get invested in the control and manipulation of others and in trying to use people as antidotes to our own anxiety. With the strategy or curative fantasy of autonomy, we go in the opposite direction and try to imagine that we don't need anyone. But that strategy inevitably entails repression or disassociation, a denial of feeling. We may imagine that through spiritual practice, we will get to a place where we won't feel need, sexuality, anger, or dependency. Then we imagine we won't be so tied to the vicissitudes of relationships. We try to squelch our feelings in order not to be vulnerable anymore, and we rationalize that dissociation under the lofty and spiritual-sounding word detachment, which ends up carrying a great deal of unacknowledged emotional baggage alongside its original, simpler meaning as the acceptance of impermanence.
We have to get to know and be honest about our particular strategies for dealing with vulnerability and learn to use our practice to allow ourselves to experience more of that vulnerability rather than less of it. To open yourself up to need, longing, dependency, and reliance on others means opening yourself to the truth that none of us can do this on our own. We really do need each other, just as we need parents and teachers. We need all those people in our lives who make us feel so uncertain. Our practice is not about finally getting to a place where we are going to escape all that, but about creating a container that allows us to be more and more human, to feel more and more.
If we let ourselves feel more and more, paradoxically, we get less controlling and less reactive. As long as we think we shouldn't feel something, as long as we are afraid of feeling vulnerable, our defenses will kick in to try to get life under control, to manipulate ourselves or other people. But instead of either controlling or sequestering our feelings, we can learn to both contain and feel them fully. That containment allows us to feel vulnerable or hurt without immediately erupting into anger. It allows us to feel neediness without clinging to other persons. We acknowledge our dependency.
We learn to keep our relationships and support systems in good repair because we admit to ourselves how much we need them. We take care of others for our own sake as well as theirs. We begin to see that all our relationships are part of a broad spectrum of interconnectedness, and we respect not only the most intimate or most longed for of our relationships, but also all the relationships we have, from the most personal to the most public, which together are always defining who we are and what we need in order to become fully ourselves.
Relationships work to open us up to ourselves. But first, we have to admit how much we don't want that to happen, because that means opening ourselves to vulnerability. Only then will we begin the true practice of letting ourselves experience all those feelings of vulnerability that we first came to practice to escape. Well, that is the end of it.
I have some questions for you, for us all, but any thoughts or reflections?
Well, there was one thing that Jill read that I really wanted to try and remember right now, but for everybody else now, I can't remember exactly. But it had to do with our practice is about creating a container. Mm. And I understand that from the standpoint of Sishin. I understand that from the standpoint of our community. But is she talking about a larger container of all the people that I have relationships with every time?
I don't know.
I kind of didn't fully get that.
A practice is not about finally getting to a place where we are going to escape all of our longing, dependency, need, vulnerability, but about creating a container that allows us to be more and more human, to feel more and more. I'm guessing he's using the sense, like Charlotte Jokobek would talk about, a bigger container, that when we just kind of embrace whatever our experience is, that we become the bigger container for those feelings. That's my guess. Anybody else has thoughts about that?
Maybe a sense of the wider self of other experiences, interconnection between people that have been in our lives or were drunk.
So I would say, are your relationships, and I mean primarily human relationships because they're a lot more challenging than the animal ones, are your human relationships part of your practice? And if so, what does that mean to you?
Reflecting your human relationships, they serve to provide like a mirror for yourself. When irritation comes up, or resentment, or judgment of any sort, it's always about yourself. You know that, like with practice, you realize that it's not about that person, it's about yourself and where you are stuck. So increasingly with practice, I find that relationships are huge teachers about my own, where I'm stuck and where I need to work, you know. So that's with everybody, especially with close relationships, but also know, it's just everyone. What irritates you about them, you know, what you resent.
I feel like practice helps me remove myself and my issues. Like, I'm able to kind of see it more clearly and focus more on, like, if there's an issue, trying to help. It helps me to focus more on, like, what are they going through rather than, oh, they're insulting them. You know, it used to be more like, why are they upset at me? Why are they, you know, yelling at me? Or what, you know, it's not about me. Trying to remove myself. I don't know how to describe it. We're in now more wondering what actually, like, I think before I would say, yeah, I'm really concerned about them, but I wasn't. I was concerned about my own self. Yeah. But now I'm actually really, I am, like, removing myself so then I can actually see what's going on with them and being calmer about it, not taking it so personally. That to me has been the biggest shift and has helped diffuse a lot of, like, anger or sadness. It just helped a lot.
And then that's twofold, because that's helping your relationships, but it's also like an opportunity to practice, like, giving up self, mm-hmm. which is another practice, you know, useful and valid in and of itself. What would you say is practicing in those situations versus not practicing?
Well, I would say it's kind of a combination of what these two ladies said. I would just add to that mindfulness beyond this container that's this big, mindfulness that's maybe as big as this and then even broader, and can tolerate a certain amount of emotional upheaval in the moment, some kind of interpersonal event that isn't too distracting because of that mindfulness container that's bigger than the self and begins to embrace others that are part of the moment.
Sometimes about a fixed frame of reference versus an inertial frame of reference from, you know, high school physics, which is, you know, if I'm in a fixed frame of reference, I can see myself moving in response to the situation as I see the situation and the other person moving as well. If I'm in an inertial frame of reference, I'm getting thrown around and it only looks like they're moving. And so something about, practice is maybe something about keeping that fixed frame of reference so that you see all of the movement. So you don't get dragged.
And teacher that said the relationships bring out the worst in you. And from a practice point of view, that's not a bad thing. I always find it, and they also classic saying that it's easy to be enlightened on a mountaintop. I think we've all had that experience either, you know, at retreat or on a nice vacation or something, and we're like, ah. Oh. So I guess for me, I find it challenges me to let go of my ideas about myself, in particular ideas that I think I've got it together somehow, and then somebody will, you know, bug me or obstruct me or argue with me or something anyway, or be offended or whatever, and then you know, I respond, and it's like, oh, well, don't have it quite together as we thought. Do we? So what about those? I'm kind of guessing everybody in this room has at least one relationship that you would rather exclude from your practice. Rather just like, you know, kind of just not do that one. Which of course usually means, you know, it's the hardest or most just. And what do we do with that?
Why do they do that? And do they understand why they do that? And what happened to them? And, you know, that's when I really begin to develop some compassion. And I really take a step back and sort of wish them well and wish them loving kindness. And I find that wouldn't say I'm doing that a lot more, but I do that. It just takes me time. Time is a big part of it.
I feel like it's really hard to break habits, bad habits. Get rid of those initial reactions, especially if you have like a long, you know, I don't have a good relationship with my mother, but my sister and I can kind of, we're really positive about it and helping each other deal with our love. So I think but it's hard to break that initial habit of the reaction.
Yeah.
And to take a step back and okay, but it's nice to have them in your life. That's also positive that you're not just there's some times where it's just complaining. But which just feels good as well. But there's also other times of helping each other deal with it and help in positive ways. Because my sister is so different from me. She's way more lets things go and way more peaceful in a way, kind of just lets it, oh, that's awesome, and then just kind of lets it, whatever, and doesn't let her feel it, where I'm I want to feel it, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I think, and she helps me, I think we help each other balance, mm-hmm. So me to help her kind of speak up a little bit sometimes, and then me to settle down, so I'm not going to change anything, so just let go. So why, just figure out how I react to it. But having an ally is huge. That's also positive, because you can have an ally that you just complain all the time, and it doesn't do anything. But noticing those habits and trying to figure out, it's just so hard to sometimes I'm really great at it, and then other times it's bam, I just did all the things I said I wasn't going to do, I was going to do that. I don't know, it's challenging, especially when it's a long, that's a long gal. That's hard.
And to study Buddhism is to study the self. So what is something that you have learned about yourself through relationship that you probably would not have realized otherwise, positive or negative?
You start.
I was just going to offer something. What comes to mind is, I think, the more, the closer, the more we have going on in a sangha, and the more opportunities there are for people to interact over years, we end up teaching each other. And one lesson that I remember was I was in charge of some kind of, I don't know, I think I was in charge of the people who took care of the altars and the ceremonies. I was the team leader. We had enough people at Dharmarine, you could actually have a team. And so I was the team leader of that, and I was thinking there was somebody who was assisting me or on my team or whatever, and then I arrange for things are looking good here, I'm gonna go over and do this other project instead, and kind of left that behind, and it was, I'm really glad she did. I'm sure it wasn't easy. She came and talked to me and said, part of the reason that she signed up to do what she did was because she wanted to study with me, that she wanted to mentor with me, she wanted to work with me, and now I just blew it off. And it was this lesson that these are human beings, these are human relationships, my tendency to just let's get this shit done, the most efficient way possible. Basically what matters is getting it done, not that I'm doing it, not that I'm there. And realizing, no, in at least in some circumstances, people care that it's me. That's not, just getting it done is not the only thing. So I was able to see how, what can be a strength in a certain way of just, being really efficient, getting a lot of stuff done, also blinds me to people's, to more like intimacy with people. So. I was just doing it tonight. I was just unpacking from session and just kind of like, no, I'll just do it myself. Because I blah, blah, blah. It's the most efficient way.
I realized that session, because I was in such a crouching mood so much of the time, and people kept asking me to do stuff, and I kept saying yes, and kept getting more annoyed. You're in a crap mood. Say no. Why can't you say no? Why are you such a chump? But I realized that you can't say no because no is saying no to a relationship. When someone comes to ask you for something. But the part that can't say no is the part that wants relationship with people. Which is something of a surprise for someone who tends to think of themselves as a martyr.
Yeah, so there's something positive in that, as well as kind of like, well, I can't just say no.
Yeah. Turns out I can't say no because I don't want to.
I think I learned something from my parents. So my dad passed away about 2.5 years ago, and he was always a very positive person in my life. My mother was always laying down the law, and she always talks about people. She always has. I mean, and I spent more time around my mom, I guess, than my dad. And so I grew up with that. And after my dad passed away, I realized he didn't do that. Huh. And it just made me so aware of it, And I really, it just kind of adds a whole other element to how I think of my dad. And I'm trying to be more mindful about talking about people. It's just such a habit, because of. But the hardest part is when I'm around my siblings and stuff. That was very interesting.
So in a way, you saw that you had another option as well, in a way,
right.
Like. You were just as exposed to the way that he did it. Had a very close friend, actually. I mean, isn't it precious when people give this kind of feedback, that especially when it's not done with anger? And she had been going through something tough, and Well, and one of the things that it taught me is that I don't naturally ask how you're feeling. I kind of come from a culture where I'm showing you respect by figuring you'll handle it and you'll let me know if you're really freaked out. Right? Like, I'm here. I'm not running away from you, but I'm not, how you feel, you know, I mean, that's, I mean, I will actually upset my husband if I ask him that. He will just be like, well, now I'm not feeling so great. Like, just that, you know, to him that feels very invasive, and now he's got to come up with some kind of answer. And so I'm used to just like, and yet what I responded to this friend with was like, do you need a ride to that appointment? You know, do you need like offering to do stuff? And she explained her experience of just feeling very unsupported, but then having to go, all right, well, I guess that's how she shows she cares. And so I was kind of like, wow, that is a valuable thing to know, is that my first inclination is just going to be like, how can I help? Do you want me to ask you how you're feeling? And yet then I've tried it since. I feel a little bit like, you know, an autistic person that's being trained what you should do, because I'm kind of like, how are you feeling? And then people have this, like, people, generally speaking, they respond with like, well, you know, and they tell me how they're feeling. And I'm like, wow, this really works. This is great. So, I mean, my last question is a little, I don't know, maybe it's too profound for our energy level tonight, but I think, you know, so we're learning things about ourselves through relationship in this kind of relative practical sense, but then there's other aspects of our practice, other things that we want to awaken to, like the absolute or essential aspects of reality. Emptiness, no self, boundlessness, suchness, Buddha nature. So what have relationships taught you about those things? About those things. Emptiness, no self, boundlessness, suchness, Buddha nature.
I don't have a lot of no self.
No, you don't. Well, to some extent, just that the things that people have mentioned about just people upending your sense of yourself and your narratives and stuff. I feel like that's a good lesson in no self. You thought things were one way, or a relationship was one way, and it's not. What about parents? Can you see your child's Buddha nature?
I've been thinking, I mean, you learn so much from your kids, I think, more than your kids learn from you. I mean, my one daughter who's been through lots, you know, and I've been with her, she's been suicidal, it's been very hard. But she's got this wonderful soul. I mean, I've learned a lot from her. You know, and I know if she ever does take her life, I sort of thought, well, it'd be okay. good now, but it's pretty profound. I mean, I don't know how that relates to it, but it's like, it's been to the depths of her.
So I'm guessing by that you mean like, so even if she did take her life someday, that it doesn't delegitimize the person that she has been all this time. And
I did learn, you know, she tried living with me for a while, and that's very hard. First of all, when someone's that depressed, but then I always want to help her, and that's the worst thing. She doesn't want help, and she is so perceptive. If I say something, you know, and I don't think it's that, but she can see deep into me what I'm trying to say. So,
it's
important. We can't live together. She's gorgeous.
That reminds me, like, in this article, what I really liked is, when you try to fix something, especially for your children, I mean, when you try to fix, you're not staying with your own vulnerabilities. You're scared because you don't want to stay there, and so you try to fix it. But if you stay with it, you grow. You know, and that's what we try.
She just pushed me like that, and you feel it.
Wow.
Yeah. And my daughter told me one time, you know, like, I always try to help and like, well, maybe you can have this. And she says, don't overcompensate all the time. And that pushes you back to yourself and just being there for them, you know.
I mean, I think she's something that's more very perceptive. They can see right into you.
Parenting is the worst. I mean, it's the weirdest. That's one relationship where you don't want to feel like you're not doing a good job, right? So you try to overextend yourself and overcorrect and over. Instead of just staying with it and saying, okay, you know, I'm not perfect and I
sure would like to do it over again, but
yeah, that's what I said. I told her I wish I could do it all over again. She said, what would you have done different? I said, just loved you more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of trying to fix things.
Let's go home early.
Yeah. This was really wonderful.
It wasn't a cop-out?
I don't think the fact that we appear to have low energy meant that we had low energy around this topic. It's just so thought-provoking. Mm.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Mm. And to end on Miocha's comment, I mean, for all of us.
Yeah.
I got the money's worth.